Welcome to Geeks On, a show created by geeks for geeks, covering topics that geeks like to talk about. This week, it's Geeks On Mailbag. For more information and news we talk about in the show, go to our website at www.geekson.com. Hey, everybody!
Hello, my geeklings!
Hey, welcome back to another episode of Geeks On.
Oh, it's an early morning, Geeks On!
Oh my god, I'm so tired.
Wow.
Especially because we sat around and we played Descent last night.
Yes, which I'm going to talk about in our news section, so...
But I want to talk about it now.
We'll talk about it after we introduce ourselves. Okay. Hi, my name is Aaron Hendricks, and I'm a graphic designer and filmmaker here in Los Angeles.
Hi, my name is Matt, and I'm an actor here in Los Angeles.
My name is Don. I am a video game professional and writer here in sunny Hollywood.
Hi, my name's Peter, and I'm a screenwriter here in Los Angeles.
God. Yay!
Yay! What is that?
It's like a light on the wall.
It's like a. It's just like
getting bigger.
It just like busted in. Anyway.
Whoa! Going for 8 feet per hour, and two, your parking will go out the loading zone, and three. Oh, damn! Just a boat.
Alrighty, well, let's move on.
What the heck was that?
It was like an audio. It was like an audio glitch or something.
So weird.
Alrighty, audio glitch aside, we will move on. How was your guys' Geek Week?
I'm in work hell. I have no Geek Week. I'm not doing anything geeky right now.
Nothing.
Nothing. Geeky. I am geek free.
I've just been really busy working too. I just finished a screenplay and now I'm working on another one. So it's busy.
Well, I have a geeky project that I've been working on, but I'm not going to talk about it quite yet.
People
will know about it later. But I did, I'm moving through the orange box. As you guys know, I've been talking about, I got through Half-Life 2. I finished episode 1. Now I'm going about ready to start Half-Life episode 2, which I think is only like 3 or 4 hours if you play through. But if once I get through that, I'll have gone through everything in the whole orange box disc.
Matt will never be able to mock you again.
Yeah. I mean, that's like 5 freaking games.
All in one disc. I can still mock him.
Oh, please. I need to do that before some crazy games start coming out here soon. So I got to get it done. So anyway, I haven't had a great... my geek week has been stymied by crazy work, so... What can you do? But we've played some games, yeah. Which we'll talk about here soon. Matt is... Well, even though you heard an introduction of Matt, that we faked it.
We totally faked it. Matt is not in the room.
He's going to be here soon.
Speaking of faking things, for those of you who haven't caught on yet, 2 episodes ago was actually our April Fool's episode. A lot of people came to the forums, figured it out.
Peter feels that it's necessary to, I think we should just let it ride. Let the people not, they don't, haven't figured it out.
But think of all
the
joy. Come
on, the names.
Think of all the joy in realizing that you were had for an episode.
I loved all the emails we got from people trying to find videos of John McCain playing Magic the Gathering.
I mean, you know.
But I'm having more fun with the people still worried about Apple losing the I from the iPhone.
Yeah.
And I think it was funny that I guess people didn't hear some of the names. We had these fake names, like for the intelligent design one with about artificial intelligence robots. I mean, Rob Ott and Andrew Droid was the two guys that I made up. I thought that was going to be a little too obvious. And
I stole one. I had April Pazzo, which means April Fools in Italian.
I think Matt's person, the woman was that worked at NASA, was Surely Not.
Yeah, Surely Not.
That was pretty good.
And our interview was not a real interview.
No, it was in fact not that famous individual we claimed to be interviewing.
Yeah, it was a friend of ours doing a great impersonation. So,
oh, you guys are ruining everything. There are some people out there who didn't know. We should just let it ride. But
all right,
whatever.
Should we jump into some news?
Let's do some news. Who's going to start news?
Matt's not here. I don't know if we could do the music.
Oh my god. What are we going to do?
How do we start the music? geek news.
There we go.
Okay.
Peter, why don't you start out one?
Okay, well, there's a new study basically about women and female geeks, basically. And it was really interesting. They had a couple things.
We need to study more female geeks.
Yes.
In-depth study.
Much detail. A couple things. Apparently, women are overtaking men in terms of geekiness. So,
oh, please.
More women stream. Hey.
We have not yet begun to geek.
More women stream TV shows from network TV sites than men. 15% of online women did so last month compared to 11% of men.
Mm-hmm. It's because men hog the remote.
Moms with kids under the age of 6 and English-speaking Hispanic women were the most active women segments.
Really?
Of streaming. Yeah. Women in DVR households are much more enthusiastic about them. They use their DVRs 9.3 times per week on average, opposed to 8.3% for men. When it comes to gaming, 70% played a PC game last month versus 69% of men.
Now, my wife plays more video games than I do.
Exactly, yeah. And in fact, my wife,
she's
oddly
gonna kill you for announcing that on air.
Oh, she knows. I mean,
she's going to take you out at the knees.
But they play different types of games.
Yeah, they're playing, you know, Peggle and
Tetris, and
they're playing the games that I make.
Exactly, that's exactly right. Yeah. So
now if you guys could just figure out how to charge $60 for each one of those.
Yeah, seriously.
Men continue to lead console gaming, so that's not a surprise. And then we've got women are more likely to.
I think that's Matt driving my dog nuts.
We're going to pause for a moment.
Hang on.
Pausing.
Hello, Matt.
Hi. I made it.
All right. So jump back in and finish the news story.
Finish it.
Women are more likely to have a Sony PSP than men.
Interesting.
African-American women are particularly engaged in console games, with 2 in 3 participating.
Mm-hmm.
Really?
Women also lead social networking crowds, where 42% of online women versus 41% of online men visited a social media site in the last month.
That I'm not surprised at all.
So basically, to give a couple senses of where this might be coming from, among moms, we see the largest number of women experiencing acute time poverty, and their motivation for much of their technology adoption is to better manage their time.
Acute time poverty?
Yeah.
Oh, God.
Well, you know,
it's what is it? Acute time poverty? ATP?
I got ATP.
Well, and the other thing is, I think a lot of like new moms, right, they can't leave the house.
Yeah.
You know, so you desperately crave adult interaction at a certain point. Yeah. So if the only way you can get it is over the internet.
Yeah. So the reason why video games are bad for kids is not because kids are playing them. It's because moms are sitting there playing Peggle while their kids are starving or not being paid attention.
If you haven't seen this, there's this series of online videos called The Guild. Which is about a bunch of people playing World of Warcraft together.
Okay.
And the woman who puts it together is one of the young Buffyettes from the final season of Buffy. But one of the characters in the guild is this stay-at-home mom. And it's always showing her at the computer just complaining about her kids who are, like, in the dog cage. Or, nice. Like, you know, penned up in the kitchen setting fire to something.
That's
it's
not
just
good.
Beautifully funny. I really like that.
Funny. Next news story?
All right. So, life in London captured digitally. I thought this was fascinating. It's much better if you see the video. If you go to BBC...
Jesus, we're never going to get through this episode.
It's like I'm stuck in assignment. Basically, there's this really cool cyclotron in the middle of London, and it's a digital photography project that's been started by a couple of guys, and it's called a memory project. And what it does is, over a period of 48 hours, it records everything around it with 100 cameras or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
And if you go inside the cyclotron, it has a couple of devices that basically always know where you are in space when you're within the cyclotron.
Mm-hmm.
And it tracks your movement. If you then focus, and there are a series of monitors around the interior of the sort of rounded space.
Mm-hmm.
If you walk towards any of the monitors, it takes you back in time, 48 hours.
This is like, we're heading toward...
So,
What? Like holodeck-y stuff.
Well, it's really funky because you can basically move back and forward in time just by taking steps forward or back towards a monitor. Or you can find one place in time that you like and then move in a circle around the cyclotron and look at all of the monitors and see what point in time what was going on at around London. It's fascinating.
So this is like a one person per room thing.
No. I mean,
how 20... do you track 100 people in there if everyone's staring at the same monitors?
I don't know. But they were doing it. They were doing it with 5 or 6 people, and they were able to move back and forward in time, and it was fascinating. It was really fascinating.
It'd be interesting after it's been there a few years, so they can expand the time frame to years.
Well, what they're going to do is they're going to actually move it around London, so it's various different places in London for 48 hours each.
I think it'd be more
fun
to see it.
Years.
Me too.
Yeah. I'd like to be able to, like, see the 80s, you know?
That would be... That's a lot of tape.
And in 20 years from now, people could.
That's a lot of JPEGs.
That's a lot of tape.
Huh, that's an interesting idea.
Yeah.
Well, let's see. my news story, GeekSpeak, has become the fastest growing language in Europe. As new words are invented to describe technological advances.
Oh, not like leet speak, but... Geek words.
I thought you meant leet speak as well, which
this is actually a new thing. This is a new thing. Experts claim about 100 new words are added to the language of technology, dubbed nerdic, every year.
Nerdic.
3 times the number of new words making it into the Oxford English Dictionary.
Really?
Okay? That's a lot of words. This year, the number of new nerdic words will rise to 200, according to research carried out by e-tailer Pixmania to mark the 15th anniversary of the internet.
Wow.
So, I mean, they say things like, you know, everyone who knows what it means to Google something. And technology is moving at such a rapid pace these days that there are more and more new words coming into the English language. If you're really into technology like me, it's possible to have an entire conversation in Nerdic, although not everyone else would be able to understand it.
That's fascinating.
And I think everyone in this room has done that at some point
or
another.
Absolutely. You know? Yeah, I was trying to describe a computer problem on my friend Bags' computer. And I was sitting there trying to get it to him, and I was like, you know what? It's like telling you how to find a bar in the West Village. I could walk you there, but I can't tell you how to get there over the phone. You just don't have the language for it.
Right.
So words created to describe technological breakthroughs can transcend other languages, the research found. For example, the word internet is understood and used throughout the world, even in non-English-speaking countries. In France, the translation of internet is, sorry to all of our French listeners, toile d'araignée mondiale.
That's long.
But most people still refer to it as the internet.
I would too.
Calls have even been made to have Nerdic recognized as an official language. The researchers This is what I find very interesting. Researchers found that Nerdic contained 3 core elements needed to define a language: words, phrases, pronunciations. So, technically, if you want to speak purely on a technical level,
it's just words. I mean, why would you define just a set of additional vocabulary as an entire language?
Well,
I'm going to go Google
something.
Isn't
every language a set of vocabulary?
I disagree because...
Yeah, but what I'm saying is a language... I mean, I don't know what defines one language as opposed to
words,
another
phrases,
language.
Pronunciation.
No, but
yeah,
here's
but how
the
do
thing.
You know, like, what when I've moved from English to Spanish, why are those two things considered to be different? It's that different people will understand...
Exactly. Right. Like this article already covered, saying you can have entire conversations in Nerdic that people won't understand.
I get what you're saying, but I think that a language in general would need to cover a lot of basic things that this wouldn't. I mean, it needs to have certain basic words that are discrete.
Can you say, where's the bathroom, and I need a beer?
Exactly.
Those are the two things that you need to travel to Nerdic land to be.
I'm just saying that I think this is a step towards being a language, but not it would have to
and
go.
And I would counter with there are lots of languages that don't have words for certain concepts.
All right. Okay.
People use English because it covers a lot of kind of corporate things. It's a good trade language.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas if I remember correctly, like French has words for different emotions that just don't exist in English.
Mm-hmm.
Schadenfreude doesn't exist in English.
Yeah.
You know?
Yes, but the point is that...
What does that mean?
The Schadenfreude is the enjoyment in someone else's pain, what I'm doing right now with you.
It's a very German word.
But the point is not that there are not words that are discrete to each language. The point is that languages tend to have at least a base of certain words so that you can communicate ideas, concepts, things like that.
Right. But these, this has a base of certain words.
Right. Okay. Yeah. So tell me how to say I need to go to the bathroom in Nerdic.
Well, no, wait a minute. Wait a minute.
I don't speak Nerdic.
I don't think you have to go that far. I mean, like, there are certain animals that have a language, and just because they can't speak a certain thing doesn't mean that it's not considered a language.
And
because they can't ask for a beer at a bar, does it mean that bees aren't communicating with each other?
Every language in existence at some point was connected to another language. They all split off from each other.
And
at a certain point, you have to start recognizing them as being separate.
I agree. But what I'm saying is that to be a language and to be a human language, not a bee language. Okay.
Well, who said nerds were human?
But to be a human language and not some muskrat language.
Now you're starting to close in on this definition.
Muskrat language. Talking to you is easy because you speak Nerdic.
But the point is to be considered, you know, not just a series of words, to be considered not just
cohesion of whatever, shared terms.
To actually become a language implies a certain amount of breadth.
Yeah, I would think they would have to have some type of working.
Well, that's what they're saying. Is that if this is increasing 200,
three times the rate of any other language,
you know, right. then basically what it is a functional engineering language.
Yeah.
I mean, what I would look at it is that this is like early mathematics. And if you look at mathematics now, mathematics at higher levels is functionally a language. I mean, functionally they can tell each other jokes. They're just sending formula over the the internet.
But have you ever heard mathematicians tell each other jokes? It's a little disturbing.
Yeah, but
maybe they're using and but, which is, you know, but we share words from other languages that we steal in English.
German and English both use and.
But has anybody considered saying that there's a medical language, that the only way for doctors to converse in their field is to switch to?
There is. Well, Latin. That's what doctors are primarily using, is Latin or Greek.
No, but there's all sorts. I mean, using medical terms.
I don't know. Because I'm not a medical tech. Yeah. I have no idea.
But I would look. I would say that I agree that it is on its way to becoming a language. Okay.
Fundamentally starting.
And I would say that there's, you know, a level of gray space that is gradually getting darker or lighter. You know, I mean, in other words, that it is a gradiation.
So perhaps in 50 to 100 years, this would be...
Maybe even in 10 to 15 years, but right now it's not.
The more people, the more the public understands those words, the more it becomes English.
Okay, that's interesting. Well, that's why...
Like, if I tell somebody, you know, I used to say, oh yeah, I was at work rendering something, but most people didn't know what rendering was. But now, when I say that... people around me knows what the word rendering is, or
right.
You know what I mean? Then now that's an English term. It's now moved from being a strictly nerdish to English.
Hmm.
So anyway, okay.
So let me just share with you the top 10 nerdic words and phrases for 2008.
Okay.
As put forward by pixmania.com. WiMAX. Rickroll.
What's WiMAX?
Oh, come on.
UGC.
What's music. WiMAX?
Supersized Wi-Fi will give whole cities internet coverage.
Oh, okay.
UGC, meaning user-generated content.
Okay.
Mashup. RFID, radio frequency identification.
Oh, so no acronyms are counting? Okay.
Acronyms are
always. If the acronym becomes the word.
The word, okay.
Yeah, absolutely.
FUBAR.
Android, meaning think iPhone, but with a slightly different interface on phones from Samsung to HTC, and with the ability for anyone to make applications for it.
It's a product. That's pushing it. Okay, keep going.
HDMI, the new SCART lead, allows you to connect high-def devices together, like your TV to your new Blu-ray player. Fuel cell.
I call shenanigans on this list.
HSDPA.
USB drive, Ethernet port. I was like, come on.
DVBH.
Please.
What does that mean?
HDMI is this year's?
The new SCART lead, yeah.
Okay. What is right. DVBH?
Aaron,
the thing is, you have to keep in mind, they're talking about it entering into mainstream vocabulary.
No.
Yes, that's what this is.
The story is about Nerdlish.
If it doesn't become sort of mainstream, if it doesn't become widely understood, it can't be part of any language.
No, that's the exact opposite of what you were arguing.
No,
it's
not.
Everybody knows it's freaking English. If only the nerds know it, it's Nerdlish. I've known HDMI for freaking 4 years. I mean, Jesus.
But that's because
okay, I give you Rick Roll.
You're a freaking 12th level nerd, man. You have to let the world catch up.
All right, let's move on. I'm done with that article. Shenanigans.
And I'll share the top 10 words to forget as my next news story.
Okay.
Excellent. Never gonna let you go. Never gonna let you
go. I second his shenanigans. All right. Who's next?
Okay. The Grand Theft Auto 4 review of IGN was the first one that came out. Okay. And I just want to give you some quotes from IGN's review. Again, this is Grand Theft Auto 4 coming out, I think, next week. Every facet of Rockstar's new masterpiece is worth of applause. Without question, Grand Theft Auto 4 is the best game since The Legend of Zelda Ocarina. Sorry. Legend of Zelda Ocarina of Time. They gave it a 10. A 10 out of 10, which I haven't seen ever on IGN. I think they said the last time they did it was in 1999 for Soul Calibur.
Really?
Here's another one. The idea of, quote, living, breathing city has always been somewhat of a joke in gaming. Every city in the past has felt artificial in some way, but Liberty City feels like a real place. For the first time in a GTA game, the story is actually a greater draw than the city exploration. That's not to say that driving around the city hunting for Easter eggs isn't enjoyable, but the story is so compelling you may find yourself singularly focused till its conclusion.
Okay.
A 10 doesn't mean the game is perfect. It means the game is pushing boundaries, expanding the genre, and doing many things to a level so far above and beyond its competitors that it overshadows any flaws. Certainly, GTA 4 has some issues, most notably being the occasional flaw in the cover system. But there are many more pieces to GTA 4 that are better than anything I've ever seen in a game in the past decade.
Wow. That's
we don't give 10s very often, just two games that merit the score.
That's a hell of a review.
The video review started out as this is the best game I've played in the last 10 years. I was actually going to skip this game because the last Grand Theft Auto, I just thought it was fine. It just felt a little juvenile to me.
Yeah.
And yeah.
Did
and
you enjoy exploring the city more than you enjoyed playing this?
Yeah.
Yeah, totally.
Well, this game, they said single-handedly, it feels like it's grown up. And he says, you can do all the things. You can go around and beat up prostitutes. You can go around and shoot all that. He says, but the problem is it comes back to you in this game.
Oh.
You get in trouble.
So it's not just running out and
ramifications.
The cops are,
yeah, and it says it just feels more adult. And so suddenly now I think I'm going to go trade in some games and go buy this one.
Well, I really think Grand Theft Auto needed to implement that in order to defend itself from widespread criticism.
Well, I don't care about that.
No, I understand you don't give a damn about that. And I'm not saying that as a review of the game.
Right.
I'm saying that from a marketing and from a business perspective, it became the poster child of irresponsible game design.
Yeah.
So they kind of had to do that.
I don't think that they have to. I think that they make money off of that. I think that that's part of their marketing strategies, having everybody talk about how crazy of a game it is.
Absolutely.
But it did turn me off, just not that you could go around and beat a prostitute. It just felt a little juvenile, and I'm glad to hear that this maybe has grown up.
I just didn't care. I mean, it wasn't...
Yeah.
I didn't care about the storyline. It was... I got into it very briefly. Every mission that I chose to complete was either abominably easy or abhorrently hard.
Mm-hmm.
And so there was no sort of mid-level. I didn't feel like there was an escalation to the storyline, and I didn't care. I was just driving around the city, like hitting people with my car and enjoying running away from the police. So it was like...
Yeah. The motorcycle was so much fun to ride that and just go flying off of some jump. And
exactly.
Right. Well, apparently... The review also said that if even there was no single player game, that the multiplayer is so fun it'd be worth $60.
Really?
They said that 16
what
people.
What does the multiplayer allow you to do?
They said they have a whole bunch of different games like Cops and Robbers and all these games that try to keep people moving through the city, but it's the entire city with 16 people. They said nothing's turned off. Like in the past, games like that, they've had to turn off the traffic and turn off the pedestrians because there's just not enough. It's just the cops are in there, so if you start doing a gun battle with other people, the cops will start showing up and all hell will start breaking loose. They said it's a blast.
Okay.
So I actually might go pick up Grand Theft Auto 4. They've convinced me.
And there's it's on all platforms, I assume?
It's on all two of them.
Oh, right. Yeah, of course. PS3 and 360.
I saw a video of it showing the new graphics engine that they're using.
Mm-hmm.
Or physics engine, I should say. Because before, it used to be you got hit... You pretty much just fell back, got up the exact same way.
Yeah, you're a ragdoll a little bit, but...
This one, you're really a ragdoll.
Oh, really?
I mean, this one, you get a hit, and your arms and your legs are flailing. You know, you're bouncing off of things. I mean, it's like a real...
Huh. Or a ragdoll.
Yeah, I mean, it's like a real engine. And when you see how you get hit and what happens to the body, it looks like someone getting hit, and then you watch that guy get up, and you go, what? He got up?
It is a game.
I know, guy. But it was pretty yeah. funny.
Cool.
Hit it, Peter.
Okay. So, basically, I have this really amazing article here on memory. And so, there's a program out there called SuperMemo, and it is based on the concept that there is a most efficient time to learn something.
SuperMemo?
SuperMemo. And basically, what the inventor did was he basically went out and he did some research for years and years and years using himself as a guinea pig and using this concept that people had already known, which was that there is a if you study too soon something, you're wasting your time.
Mm-hmm.
If you study too late, you forget something.
Okay.
So basically, there's something, I think it's called serial learning. I'm not quite sure. I'd have to dig back.
And what do you mean soon by late, meaning based off the when you need to use the information or during the day?
Well, no. Based off, if I learn something now, how many days from now should I review it?
Okay, got it.
So there's something called the spacing effect, which this guy Ebbinghaus showed that basically said that if you change when you learn something, you can change when you review something, you can change how well you remember it.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
So basically, the way we tend to try and memorize stuff is one of two ways. We tend to either try and just keep reviewing it and drilling it and drilling it and drilling it and drilling it every day until it sticks.
Repetition.
Mm-hmm. Okay, repetition. Or we tend to try and cram, learn it for a test. You know,
we're in Los Angeles, land of the B+ students. That's you learn cramming's it, all
you,
we do here.
You pass the test, and a week later, you can't remember a fucking thing on the that you learned. Mm-hmm. You know, it's like so. Basically, what they've figured out is this. I'm going to show you guys a graph. This is great for radio. When you learn something,
damn! Check out that graph.
That's an awesome graph, Peter.
The colors, man. The colors.
Okay. So basically, when you learn something, about the first 10 days, you have a steep drop off. In your ability to remember it.
Okay.
Okay. And you know, by about day 30, it starts to level off. So if you've remembered it by day 30, you'll probably remember it.
Okay? It's in there.
But the chances are you will have forgotten it in those first 30 days.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. But so in the first 10 is where the most of the steep drop off happens. But if basically 10 days in, you go back to something you learned and you
review it.
You review it 10 days in. Then suddenly the drop off that decline is reduced significantly.
Okay? Yeah,
and then if you again review it a third time, about day 30. Okay,
so day one, day 10, day 30.
That's basically how he seems to be doing it.
Mm-hmm.
Day 30, he reviews it again, and then day 60, he reviews it again. Basically, your chances of remembering something are steeply increased. Mm-hmm. And you're not studying it every freaking day. You're just studying it these 4 days and reviewing it to make sure that it stays in your brain.
And that's better than doing it every single one of those days?
Well, that's what he says. And a lot of people have said that this works, and it works really well.
So to all of our college students out there, take note.
Yeah. And what this guy has done, I mean, this guy is pretty amazing because he literally lives his life on an algorithm. I mean, he's designed his whole life around algorithms, trying to make things the most efficient.
Now, what I'm interested in is what type of information.
Like
because
this is great for languages, for example. Okay.
Here
so
we
this
go.
Is one way. Like, you know, he noticed he was having a lot of trouble learning English. I mean, he wanted to learn English, but he basically realized if he wanted to, by using himself as a guinea pig and looking at what he was forgetting, when he was forgetting it, he realized he would have to spend 2 hours a day, every day, to get a vocabulary of about 15,000 words
right.
in his head. And he just didn't want to spend 2 hours a day to do that. He didn't mm-hmm. want to, you know, he didn't want to have to.
But, okay, if language is fundamentally based on an increasing level of knowledge, so let's say I have lesson one today. Mm-hmm. If I study lesson one today, I want to study lesson one again on day 10 and day 30.
And 60.
And 60. Right. Yeah. And does it numerically, geometrically increase like that
it just
after
keeps
day 60?
You know, I don't know, because it's...
That's as far as the graph
that's
goes.
That's where the chart ends.
Okay, right, yeah. So you're done. After 60, you got it.
The curves go away.
So if I learn lesson two tomorrow, then I need to do lesson two at 10 days after that?
Yeah, can you leapfrog your studies? So you're going, you know, like, lesson two, day two, yeah. day 32.
No, I think what you would do is you would study day one today, day two tomorrow, day three. You know, by the time you get to day 10, you're reviewing. You may even start... You may even do additional studies on day 10, but you at least review day one. You know,
but that's very interesting.
Yeah. Now, there's two things that they said that I thought were really pretty interesting, which was
I'm trying to learn Chinese right now, and it's a bitch. So
yeah.
Well, he said, you know, one of the problems is that people typically have is when you try increasingly learn more stuff that. It's kind of as if the more you're trying to learn at once, the easier it is to forget.
Right. Absolutely. Okay.
Which is why you want to be more efficient about what you're learning. Even when you're learning a lot of stuff, you want to be efficient about how you retain it. Okay. He also says
suddenly had a brief flash of Peter educating his child at age like 8 or 9. Like, no, honey, no. Okay, if you want to do your crayons, you need to do your crayons on day one, and then on day 10.
I'm taking away your crayons until day 10 and then day 30.
There was something that they said that was really interesting, which is long-term memory can be characterized by two components, which can be named retrieval strength and storage strength. Okay? So retrieval strength measures how likely you are to recall something right now. So if I just meet you and I say, oh, hi, Don, how are you? Well, I have your name in my head, and I'm going to remember your name, Don, you know, but if I walk away and come back, you know, tomorrow, I may not remember your name. Especially not 10 days later.
So, or me at a dinner party 30 seconds later.
Right. Ugh. So your retrieval strength
yeah, exactly.
is something very different than your storage strength. Storage strength, on the other hand, is something that's, you know, it can be...
It's once it's logged.
Yeah. But storage strength is different in the sense, for example, like you can have something that's logged but hard to remember what it is.
Mm.
For example... An old
anytime I'm in an argument with you guys where I'm like it's like you know it's
and then after the show you're
and then after the show I'm like aardvark
right but like an old address
I was wondering why you said aardvark after
old
the
address
show.
Yeah
yeah so an old address or an old phone number you may not remember it but say you get a reminder that one reminder might be enough to remember that address again for months or even years just by having that. So that's something that's got a high storage strength. It's stored. It's in your brain somewhere. You just may not have access to it.
We have got to come up with some type of drug or something. Our brains are too messed up.
Is this going to be going along with your body Drano, Aaron?
I guarantee body Drano will be out before we are old.
It's called X-Lax. What's wrong with it?
No, that goes through your blood system and cleans out your arteries.
It's called heroin, Aaron.
So... It also says that one of the problems is that the amount of storage strength that you gain from practice is inversely correlated to the current retrieval strength. Okay, now let me say that a different way.
Yeah.
In other words, the harder you have to work to get the right answer,
mm-hmm.
the more the answer is sealed in memory.
So it's like the Chinese thumb screw things. The harder you pull, the harder it is to get out.
Yeah. So
if that's precisely, not a derogatory term. Chinese finger trap.
Chinese finger trap. Thumb torture. I don't know.
Precisely those things that seem to signal we're learning well, easy performance on drills, fluency during a lesson, even the subjective feeling that we know something are misleading when it comes to predicting whether or not we will remember it in the future.
So the more relaxed you are?
No. Or
the harder you have to work at it?
The harder you have to struggle to learn something, the more you tend to keep it in memory long term.
Oh, okay.
But if you learn something and you seem to pick it up right away...
Mm-hmm.
Oh, I get that. I got it. you know, 10 days later, you might not remember it.
Huh.
So it's a really amazing article. Huh. And
actually sort of the video game school of learning things. You know, like the first few levels where you're like learning the tutorial on how the character moves. You never really know how the character moves until you've gone through a level and you've gotten your ass shot off like 5 times.
Mm-hmm.
So mm-hmm. there's a video game school.
But you click through all those instructions anyway, and then you get...
And then I rock.
No, then 8 hours in. 8 hours in, you're like, where am I supposed to go? I'm like, well, have you read the fucking little
excuse me,
box?
I'm the one who's always like...
No, I'll take the blame for that. I'm the one who clicks through the tutorial then ends up calling Aaron and Lisa at 3 a.m. I'm like, I don't know why I can't shoot straight.
I'm the one who's always telling Aaron, like, no, it's behind the box.
Anyway,
all right.
This is like a 6-page long, amazing article. We will link to it because there's a ton of more information in there, but we don't want to get into it now.
Yeah,
so.
Cool.
All right.
I have a long one as well, but I'm just going to sort of to sum up. Basically, researchers have built the world's smallest transistor. It is 1 atom thick and 10 atoms wide. Out of a material that could one day replace silicon. It's a material called graphene. It's basically a two-dimensional molecule with only the thickness of an atom.
Mm-hmm.
So, and it's both stable and robust, so it can process electricity quite well. And it's also semi-transparent, so one day it could be used to make our monitors rather than what we're using currently. But it's a fascinating article. But the fact that they've made a transistor this small means that they can make microchips much, much smaller.
Yeah, there's a couple of these that just came out this week. The other one was the guys who developed a storage system that can put like 10,000 times the amount of information in the same space.
Oy.
And so they're like, well, imagine your iPod that could hold 100,000 gigs.
Could hold the history of music as we man knows it.
Yeah, exactly.
Wow.
Yeah.
You know, I've said it before, I'm going to say it again.
The future is here.
No, we've circled back to magic. Technology is dead. All hail our wizard overlords.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, that's what happens when you get older, Don. That's the type of shit you start saying. Oh my God! Get off my cyberlog!
You push a button and the thing goes right up to the top of the building. Amazing!
Grandpa, don't push that button! Someone's going to be yelling that if McCain gets into office. I'm just saying.
Oh. Nice.
I'll a quick follow-up. Pixmania's top 10 nerdic words to forget in 2008. HD DVD. Dial-up. VHS.
Oh, my God.
Tri-band.
I can't take this list anymore.
Hits. CRT.
Aaron's got the vein pulsing in his head.
KB. Floppy disk. Mini disk. Super audio CD.
Nerdic is going to be the first language.
Was HD DVD on
we're
there?
We're supposed to forget that this year. I HD forgot DVD half that shit one. Like years ago.
Yeah,
that was in my long-term memory. You're like pulling it back. It's stuck in my brain again. I can't forget it now because you brought it back, man.
Nerdic is going to be the first language that outdates itself.
What about IRC?
Yep, it's not on the list.
Archie. Gopher. Come on. Let's put a whole bunch of other dumb shit words on
Archie. Archie?
It's an old... Yeah, an Archie... That's when
Aaron's
you used to,
nerd level 12.
You totally.
You don't get it.
I'm like an aspiring 8.
It's an old search engine. They didn't have Google back in the day before the World Wide Web, so they used to have Gopher searches and Archie searches, and then later on, even Veronica. That was right before the World Wide Web came out.
Veronica!
Gopher, hey, I remember.
Did anybody see the Kobe Bryant viral ad where basically they're making it look like it's a... basically, he jumps over a car that's speeding by at about 35 miles an hour. It starts off, and he shows you a shoe, and then he puts the shoe on, and then he gets ready, and he just leaps up in the air as an Aston Martin literally drives right underneath him. Okay. Now, it's totally special effects. It's on YouTube as if it's just, hey, dude, I'm just shooting this. I can do it. You know, but it's completely an ad, and if you look carefully, you can tell that it's been digitally made, but it's got almost 3 million views. Now, you want to talk about the most efficient way to make an ad? Okay. You make it, you shoot it, You do these effects. It only costs you that what it takes to do that. You put it up on Google or up on YouTube
for free,
and you have 3 million views already.
Yeah.
Yep.
Pretty freaking amazing.
Yeah. There you go.
Okay. I would like to.
That's so like 3 years ago. I'm sorry.
Okay.
The whole YouTube
I know, but nobody has really been able to efficiently do it. People have tried before.
Oh, you got to be kidding me.
Okay, give me an example of one person that pulled it off.
The salmon
Lonely
commercial.
Lonely Girl.
The what?
Lonely Girl, the salmon commercial with
the boxing
bear.
Yeah, but the salmon commercial was an actual commercial that was shot and put on TV.
That's true.
And someone pulled it off and put it there.
I've been reading articles about this in Newsweek for 2 years.
I know, and I've been reading about it too, but nobody has done it without having extreme backlash. Everyone that's tried to do this, where they've tried to make it like, you know, they've tried to make it appear as if it was just viral, as if it was just something that somebody shot, that it wasn't really an ad. Every time they do that, because people are so sophisticated out there, people get so pissed off that they're trying to be manipulated, and it actually is a backlash against them. This is the first time I've actually seen it work.
Aaron just smiled like a
Grinch,
so I know what he's
thinking. Only if you're being intensely narrow
in
your design. What you're talking about are the ones who got caught doing it. The ones who don't get caught doing it get plenty of hits.
Let me tell you.
The really successful ones.
Give me an example.
The Coke commercial. Like, I can't remember the actual original video, but I'm going to get into it right now. The really successful ones spawn the mockery ads. The 1010 Coke ads from Australia, where that kid's marching around and I don't even remember the base commercial now.
What about the Kimbo and the new Kimbo things?
Kimbo?
Kimbo
Slice?
You know Kimbo, the mixed martial artist?
Yeah.
I think he's got these ads where it's like Kimbo doesn't play that. This guy comes into his office, and he opens up the refrigerator, and he looks for his lunch with his name written on it, and it's not there. And he turns around, there's a dude at the table eating the guy's lunch. He goes, "Hey, that was my lunch. My name was written on it." He goes, "Oh, really?" And then he goes, "What if Kimbo did it?" Kimbo opens up the refrigerator. He goes, "Hey, goddamn it! Someone ate my lunch." He turns around, he takes a guy, and just beats the shit out of him. There's all sorts of like these.
Yeah, but that's the point. Is that again? That is clearly an ad.
Right, right, right.
You see that? You go, this is an ad that someone has done and made to be an ad.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, what we're talking about is something that looks like, you know, the laughing baby.
Yeah.
You know, like it's something that looks like somebody shot with their camera, that it's not meant to be an ad, that it's just meant to be like somebody doing something crazy.
And I stand by, they've been doing that for years.
Well, Lonely Girl.
And you say they've been doing
that. Well, listen, I'm giving you a fucking example. No, Lonely Girl is the most sophisticated one because they are developing a television show for that.
And what were they advertising?
Their television show.
No, I. What they did.
No,
again,
Lonely Girl. When she started, what was she advertising?
Herself.
Okay,
it was a development deal. She's an actress.
Okay, and I get what you're saying, but again, we're not talking about a product. We're talking that was someone that went out and just made their own. You know.
Then what were we talking about?
No, they were funded. She was funded by her agency.
Yeah, they're making a show.
Yeah,
the Lonely Girl.
No, she was actually.
Wasn't she UA? I don't remember the agency.
She was. That was an NYU project. It was made by a kid at NYU. She was an NYU student,
and then picked up by UA,
and probably picked up by UA.
Got caught because UA was the one who put all the ones on the internet. Right. That's how they got caught.
That was just some college kids that made that, and then it you know
No. Lonely Girl was not college kids. Lonely Girl was a company made that whole thing.
Yeah. That's okay. The scandal behind it.
I'll go back and research it, but I seem to recall reading that was a film student at NYU, and that she was also.
I heard different. All right, we'll research.
I could be wrong.
Yeah, and there are entire ad agencies that make killings.
Well, let me explain. There's a
generating
awesome
crap for YouTube that's supposed to look homespun.
There's an awesome one.
I understand that.
That is so old school.
But isn't that Peter's point?
You know?
That's my point, is that people have been trying to do this, and I have never seen a highly successful version of this.
Because the highly successful ones, you didn't realize you were watching an ad.
Again.
There's a great one on the internet. I'll try to find it. Somebody hired this ad agency to sell Subway virally.
Yeah.
So they did this thing that was supposed to look like, it's so bad it's laughable. In fact, I almost wonder if it's a double joke because it's so bad. It's the ad agency with video cameras coming up with the idea of the viral video.
Yeah.
And they're filming it. But the funny thing is that they're all like instead of handshaking, all the executives like, "Hey man, I got this great idea." And he comes up to the office and does the fist bump.
Yeah.
There's like way too many fist bumps from old guys in this like viral video. It's the most hysterically god awful viral video ever, and it's for Subway, and it's I'll try to find it. It's so awesome. It's so bad. But anyway, we should move on, and you guys can have your own show where you argue every week. All right. I would like to just quickly.
Did
you guys hear that? It was like another audio glitch.
Hey, if you don't like it, nobody made me buy it. And when will this be fixed? Oh, your next house, which will be ready to release sometime again next year. Actually, it was due out this year.
Where is this coming from?
I don't know. It was like a light flash and then another audio glitch.
That was odd.
You should check that.
Okay, I'll check it when I get it.
Okay. I have a loose wire here.
All right, I have just quickly some for my news. Not news, but we'll just want to talk about two games that we played, one of which is Zooloretto. I've mentioned that I had it.
Is this the one you guys played last night?
No, we didn't play Zooloretto last night. We played Zooloretto a couple weeks ago, and it was Don and Peter and his wife. And
I think did Tracy win?
Yes.
Did she win?
No, Don won.
Don won. Oh. Tracy was on. I don't know. I was a big loser.
Don beat me by 1 point.
Oh, that's right.
Interesting game. This is a very simple...
Another example of retrieval memory. And
yeah, you have to beat Peter every 10
days. I'm sorry, that
days.
Victory just came too easy. It didn't really reach its
goal. Yeah, there you go. Nice. It's an interesting puzzle. I would call it a puzzle game. It's like a multiplayer puzzle game.
Yeah.
The whole concept is that we're all zookeepers trying to get people into our zoo. And to do that, we have to get animals and put them in these cages and areas. But it's more like a...
So you have a limited number of cages, and you need to fill up each cage with as many animals as it can fit of the same type.
Of the same type. So you're constantly shifting animals in and out of barns and kind of multitasking these...
And any leftover animals you have that you can't fit into a cage, you lose points for.
Oh. Right. So it's like a resource management in the fact that you're trying to get... You're maximizing how many animals you can fit in a cage and trying to fit them in different areas. And it's like a little... It's almost like a... multiplayer solitaire game in a way. Like you're kind of playing solitaire with your puzzle.
There's no way to screw another person other than taking what they would want before they get it.
Well, not really. There is a mechanism before you start placing on your own zoo where you're loading things into trucks. Mm-hmm. And there are plenty of times where you knew that someone needed that truck, you would place a crap animal into that truck, so they had to take things that was going to screw up their single player game. It's like you know what I mean. And I thought it was a great game. It was only 45 minutes. It moved quickly.
It was quick. The game board is bright. The concept is easy. I think it's another game that's good for the non gamers. The girlfriend who's reluctant to play a game for the first time.
A lot of limited decisions. Yeah. There's only three things you can do, but each one of those things takes a lot of thought process to kind of... Yeah,
but the gameplay is quick, too, so you never feel like you're waiting for other people to go, and, with the exception of Peter, the strategy is quick, and, people make their moves quickly, and it moves along very nicely.
One of the reasons why I bought the game...
Peter's so ticked off he's going to Thailand.
Oh, yeah. One of the reasons why I bought the game is because...
I'm leaving the country.
It was a theme that wasn't historical wood grain cubes that scared people off. It was about zookeeping and it was bright and colorful. Yeah. It just looked different than my other games.
And suitable for kids, too, I think.
Oh, yeah.
Then last night you played something not that.
Last night we played the opposite of that, which was Descent Journey into Darkness, which is a fantasy flight game one of the big box games that comes in like the little mini coffins.
More pieces than you can possibly imagine.
Yeah, it's like the box the game comes in is almost as large as Aaron's dining room table.
Yeah, it's huge. And it's a the reason why I bought it's an older game. It's a dungeon crawling game. You lay out dungeon tiles. One person plays the overlord / game master, and the other players play the dungeon crawlers. In a way, it's kind of video game-ish, where you move through the dungeons. Mm-hmm. You could even die, and you respawn, and you can come back through these teleporters.
Very video gamey.
Temple of Opshai.
Yeah, I mean, it's very video gamey in that aspect. But the reason why I bought it is because the new expansion came out that turns that one single-shot game into this huge campaign where you play this giant world.
Is that what you guys played last night?
No. Well, we just played the base game just to learn it.
Right.
Because we
want people to be able to make their characters with us when the first time we actually start the campaign.
But it's a big campaign, giant map. You travel to different cities, go to taverns, find rumors.
How long is that supposed to be?
About 40 or more hours.
Divided into chunks. It's not like you have to leave the board set up for 40 hours.
Oh, okay.
No, yes.
Yeah, so I was going to say, because otherwise this is just getting played at Aaron's house.
Yeah. Yeah, well, it probably will just because of the size of the box. Right. But it's one of those games that, in fact, it even comes with these little boxes that you fold up and everyone puts their characters and all their cards in it and you close the box and it stores them. So the next time you play, you just open the box, pile them out, and all your characters are ready to go.
That's fun.
So it's meant to be played as a campaign with multiple sessions.
Cool.
It seems like a really great idea.
And the base game itself last night was a lot of fun.
I liked it.
Yeah.
I have to say, I was telling Aaron...
Well, except for the Overlord.
It's one against everyone else.
Hmm.
Right? So I told Aaron when I got here this morning that I was actually thinking about the goddamn board game last night after I left.
Hmm.
And like, I kind of want to play again.
Me too.
You know?
Yeah. If we didn't have things to do today, it would be...
Yeah. It would be a good day for it.
Excellent. You know, my favorite part of last night, which I just thought was fascinating, was when there was the knock at the door as we're playing the game.
Oh, that was really, really bizarre. Yeah.
God, I forgot about that.
So, it was really late, too. Yeah, it was like 11:30.
It's 11:30 at night, and all of a sudden there's this knock at the door. We're like, what's going on? Okay, so we go and you open the door. And there's these guys standing at our door.
Like four guys.
Four slacker dudes.
And they're like, hey guys, we were just walking by and we saw you.
No, they were driving by.
We were just driving by and we happened to look over and saw you were playing a game. We wondered, what are you playing? That looks interesting.
I had my big bay windows things.
Random. And you could tell that they were really kind of pushing to come in and actually check out the game.
Yeah, I kind of...
Yeah, we were like, no, no.
And Aaron was like, yeah, thanks, guys. So we're going to go back and finish your game. Click!
Yeah, if it was earlier
they even tried to hit us up for some Super Smash Brothers. They're like, so you guys are the gamers, right? You have like...
You play Super Smash Brothers?
You play Smash?
Wow.
Yeah. I'm like, yeah, I've played it. It's good.
Random.
You're a 14-year-old
Either
girl.
Somebody was getting a blackjack to the head and your TV was going to get carted out the door, or...
I think that
that's why I came over to the door and just loomed
They had way too much pot.
Yeah. That would have been fine, too, but...
I honestly think they were probably harmless, but I could tell that, you know, like, yeah, who knows?
Yeah, I'm like, there are four guys at 11:30 at night knocking on our door, standing on our porch. I'm just going to sit here and loom, you know?
Anyway, I thought Descent was a good game as well. It's expensive.
And Aaron was our overlord.
Yeah, that was fun. Like, you know, some people, I think it...
Did you get your evil laugh down?
No, but I'm going to practice it for the campaign.
Oh, cool. Oh, by the way, just because I didn't get to contribute on the Geek Week unless Peter did it for me, I just worked on my first anime, doing anime voiceover. And it's hilarious. It is absolutely hilarious.
What's your character?
My character is sort of the master of evil. He's the head emperor. His name is Maximilian. And it's very interesting because you have to match your English, the guys who rewrite the English to match the Japanese, to match the lip flaps of the Japanese. Which are always longer. So that's why the language ends up being very stilted. And you have these strange... Christopher Walken pauses.
Yeah.
It's very weird. It was funny.
I had one audition to do anime voiceovers, and it was the hardest audition of my life. They tell me if they do the same thing to you. They stick you in a room, to let you watch the anime, mm-hmm. right? And they give you the English script, right? And after you've like watched a couple times and tried to memorize the script as best you can, they stuck me in a room where they had the monitor in front of me, the script in front of me here, and a red light mm-hmm. here.
Beep, beep,
and you
beep.
Have to try and read the script while the red light's on in order to match the yeah. lips as mm-hmm. best as you can.
Oh, wait, let me try.
That was pretty good,
Aaron.
That was not bad.
Pretty easy.
That was pretty good.
Not bad.
Come on. Anybody can do yeah. that.
I name you Motoko.
Yeah.
No, but uh-huh. my guy had a really good evil laugh. So
sure, give us a laugh.
No, it's been trademarked and copyright. He can't do that.
Yeah, actually, I'm under the NDA.
He actually can't laugh in public yes, anymore.
No, but it's very funny. Anyway, so Aaron was the evil dude.
Oh, by the way, since we're going back into Geek Week, I did watch Cashern, which is a... It's a anime, Japanimation anime, but it's live action.
Mm-hmm. Cool.
How is it?
It's beautiful. It's got some great design. It's a kind of a green screen type movie. But it's just too Japanese for me.
Is this the one Lisa loved?
Yeah. No, she liked Paprika.
Okay.
This is a real time. This is with real people and stuff. And it's just too, I don't know. I didn't know what the hell was going on.
But pretty.
Time. Yeah,
pretty
yeah,
as hell.
Yeah, you should check out the trailer okay. at least. But if you do like, if you knew exactly what was going on during Akira, this will make complete sense to you.
Well, the teddy bears are drooling milk out of their eyes. What is not to get?
So, one last little piece of quick news: it's official. Guillermo del Toro will be directing The Hobbit.
So it is official,
and the sequel. Yep, and
there's going to be a sequel to The Hobbit.
Yeah.
What, Smaug's Revenge? What?
No, they're going to take some of the material that has been spread out through all the other books that tell some of the stories that happens
between... Oh, great, the Silmarillion.
No. It's not... it doesn't take place...
I fucking bore. Snore my ass off.
But I hear that they're going to... Yeah, it could be disaster, but...
I have a question. There's a picture of Peter Jackson and Guillermo del Toro here.
Yes, he's lost weight.
Do they look like they're becoming clones of each other?
Just oh my god! Slowly, weird.
Like
no,
you know,
it actually looks like Peter Jackson has a liposuction osmotic font connected to Guillermo del Toro, and it's sucking all the fat out of Jackson and putting it into Guillermo del Toro.
Yeah, but they look kind of very similar.
Extreme.
Well, don't you think it looks like Peter Jackson? Like they're
yeah,
like,
no, they are looking like the same person.
You know,
okay.
They both got beards. They both got wild hair.
And I just don't think my brain would ever go there.
And what do you guys feel about that? How do you guys feel?
I am intrigued, and I think he'll do justice to it.
Maybe it'll okay. have. Wait, Guillermo del Toro did Pan's Labyrinth
and Hellboy.
Oh, he's fine. Yeah. He's fine.
You're fine.
I think he will be just
Hellboy,
fine. And it will have a definite ending. Not 9.
I love the Hellboy 2 trailer. Well, I hope it lives up to it.
Frodo might die, or actually, you know, Bilbo might die at the end of it, but, you know.
Oh, good. Ruin it for us.
Well, no.
Spoiler alert.
Saying, Guillermo del Toro.
All right. Let's do our geek mail.
All right.
Mail's in.
I sensed there was mail.
What's this? A letter for me.
DeMail! DeMail is here!
Ooh. Okay, so it's geek mail this week. We've got lots of geek mail.
We have so many new girl geek listeners. It's crazy.
Joss Whedon episode, maybe?
You think that's
one? That's my guess. Maybe the podcasting thing is just, you know, getting more and more popular so that more and more people are listening.
Either way, they're in charge of social networking.
Maybe it's
so
because of my charming personality. It's getting around the internet.
You.
What? It could be.
I think it's because Don's the cute one.
Hello, ladies.
Okay, that just kind of creeped me out.
You guys are married. Screw you.
Hello, ladies. All right, so who wants to start? I have a couple forum things, too.
Well, the last time we started was... last time we did a mailbag episode was before the James Bond episode. So we're basically starting our mail right after we did our James Bond episode. So...
Oh, yeah?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. So I got a bunch from there.
Well, why don't you start, Matt, with one of these bunches?
All right. So let's hit one that sort of covers a couple. Love your show. I found your episode on James Bond very interesting, especially since it seems you guys know very little about Bond. I found your quiz hysterical, and yeah, I was one of the geeks yelling at my computer with the answer. Next time I would recommend maybe printing out a list of the movie titles and maybe an overview that happens beforehand for the group to read.
Preparation? What kind of show do you think we are?
You mixed up or went blank on a lot of details, and it made what could have been a great discussion very disjointed. Thanks for the podcast, despite my negative comments, and that's from Will.
I agree. I think he's totally right on that.
We'll tell you what. Right. We'll go to the producers and ask for an increase in budget so we can have more.
No. He's right. He's right. We should probably prep.
Screw that.
We do as much as we can. Sometimes we just get jammed up, and so.
And we are at heart.
I did prep.
Show.
I came up with the quiz and all that type of stuff.
Well, that's because you know the most about Bond.
The problem is, like,
I should have come up with a quiz for you.
Maybe. There is a chunk of, toward the end, there's a chunk of Bond
James
movies.
James Bond works for who?
There's a chunk of Bond movies toward the end of the Bond series that I really don't know much about because they were so bad.
Right.
That
Which
I
is
really,
the one where they ride a cello case down a ski slope?
Living Daylights.
God, what was that?
That was Patsy Kensit.
Actually, that was one of the ones I don't mind. One of those Bond movies I didn't mind.
I'm going to beat you with my microphone.
That's the first Timothy Dalton one.
Yeah. All
it's the
right.
second Timothy Dalton one, which is a real pile.
I gave him
I don't
the
even
boot.
Remember that one.
Okay. That is from Living Daylights, and that is bad, but I mean.
All right.
Gave him the boot.
That was the one
the
where Grace Jones is killing people with butterflies
no,
on
no,
fishing
that's,
poles.
That's a view to a kill. Roger Moore. We're proving his point yet again.
Okay. That's a view to a kill with the Golden Gate Bridge.
Yes.
And Christopher Walken.
Yes.
Petting a cat.
No.
That's pet a cat. That's
a
Batman
movie. No, that's also
that's where Christopher Walken goes, Bruce, surplus of power, no such thing. If my life has a meaning, that's the meaning. That's my favorite Christopher Walken line ever. Maxwell Schreck.
I love Christopher Walken, but the man's a whore. I mean, he's a whore.
All right, so you're right. You're right. We will try to prepare more.
Somebody else hit it.
Dre, this is from the forums. By the way, I like to thank Dre. Gave me a birthday present.
No, he did not.
He did.
What did he give you?
He gave me a game that he made.
Really?
Yeah. We haven't played it yet, but
it looks pretty darn cool.
Yeah, actually, it's another tile laying. It's actually kind of a same type of concept, I think. But
funky.
No, we should. We're going to break it out.
Okay,
give it a whirl. But so thanks, Dre. But Dre also is a big member of the boards. Helps us out a lot. Sends us emails. Here he says, "My friend at Electronic Arts totally hooked me up today. I received a mysterious package from EA. Inside was one of the 1,000 limited edition Risk Black Ops board games. This one had a note from the designers with their signatures. He's working on... I don't know if he should be saying this, but...
He's working somewhere.
He's working on an Xbox Live version, and so they all get copies. He's got a... We'll put a link to the Board Game Geek. But Risk Black Ops... I know a little bit about this.
Risk Black Ops?
It's called Risk Black Ops.
Ooh.
It's a Risk... It's a game where essentially they've tried to fix some of the problems with Risk and kind of update
Australia.
Well, I don't know if it fixes that problem, but one of the problems is that it's a elimination game.
Okay,
so if you play with six people, somebody's ass is going to be sitting out for 2 hours,
which is
a problem. And it's also just too long for most people,
right?
And a couple other, there's all sorts of little problems with Risk, just in general. I mean, it's a great game. We all know it's a classic game, but in general, hasn't been updated. I mean, it's been updated a million times.
So it's not really what I think of as a gamer game, you know?
Yeah, and these different versions keep coming out, like the God one, the science fiction. But this one actually sounds like it actually might seriously be a good addition. What it does is it puts goals in the game. So everyone has mission cards.
Kind of like the railroad one?
Kinda. And you get points for them. And so the game ends when the points, when someone reaches a certain amount of points. So you don't have to, you don't have to dominate the entire freaking planet in order to win the game. Hmm. You can play to a certain amount of points, and so you can control how long your game is. So if you want to play like an hour long game, you can do that. Hmm. You can play with 2 to 5 people, and it scales better. And anyway, they've been trying to think about how to get out of the, some of these problems. But they only made 1,000 copies of the game. It's
why?
Well, because it's a it was like a playtest you know game.
Oh, we need to play Magic, by the way, you and I.
Okay, I'll play Magic.
Okay,
so they're going to come out with a board, a retail version of this apparently, that's, you know, got all the bits and pieces, and according to Dre, an Xbox Live version, which
can't wait.
Exciting. Actually, that could be cool.
That could be really cool.
I could.
I'm all for the board games on Xbox Live because I Lost can Cities, go on it.
Lost Cities came out Wednesday. It got mixed reviews from the video game community. Lost Cities is a two-player card game that's considered one of the better two-player games out there.
One of the best.
Really? Don gave that to me. I haven't played it. Peter owns it. So anyway, I'm going to download it on Xbox Live just because I want to support that.
Cool. One for Don.
Let's see. Don, you had mentioned sickle cell disease in Africans and said it might protect them from something else. Yes, the sickle form of red blood cells makes it very hard for malaria to lodge itself in it and reproduce. Ooh. In a heterozygous carrier, it also has no major negative effect on quality of life. From Matthew.
I love how you can pronounce heterozygous like you just roll it off every day, but you can't pronounce French words.
I don't speak French.
He speaks Nerdlish.
Right, forgot.
Heterozygous is in Nerdish.
Okay, sorry.
Another great thing about having so many people listening is that there's always an expert in something.
Oh, we get so many corrections every week,
which is great. It's freaking awesome because I mean, it's like having a huge brain. Yeah. It's like you're constantly getting great information.
When we do our conspiracy episode, I want to set up a conspiracy. That maybe, like, if the world goes to crap, we have where all the geeklings assemble. That way, you know, if it's like The Stand, we'll be ready. Because we have
basically... So we'll have a meeting spot.
We'll have a meeting spot where... Because we have biologists and, you know...
Child, it's okay if you don't believe in Gary Gygax. Gary Gygax believes in you.
Exactly. It's the new Gary Gygax religion.
All right, we'll talk about it. We'll have a meeting place. That's a great idea.
I think we need to
We need to prepare now. Because that's bullshit. You don't want to be caught.
Okay, hold on. Okay, because you said it, I have to ask the question. We can keep it confidential. You can raise your hand so the listeners won't know.
Okay.
Who here has, in some minor way in their mind, conceived of what you would do in case of a zombie outbreak?
Oh, everyone has. Yeah, everyone has a zombie escape plan.
I have to tell you this. Peter's so excited.
Okay, for all listeners, it was unanimous. Okay. Yes.
I was walking down the street with my wife, and I just turned to her and I said, "Honey, I have to ask you a very bizarre question."
For God's sake, you don't bring it up to your mom.
Do you ever walk by a house and consider, I wonder how that house would fare at a zombie outbreak? The look on my wife's face.
In horror.
Not zombie horror, however.
Let's just say I would sleep on the couch for about a month.
Okay, on dig.com, on Dig right now, there's a link to somebody who has a whole article about how each candidate would react to a nationwide zombie attack.
Oh, God, I got to see that.
Oh, it's on Dig. That's awesome. Right now. Although I do have to say, I do love my wife more because the other day, I mean, she just got wrist surgery.
I hope you love your wife more than you love my wife.
Right. That'd be weird. Not more than your wife. Awkward. Just more than I did the second before she did this.
Oh, okay.
She was at the door and she fumbled with her keys because she's got one hand that's been surgically operated on. And she went, "Up, zombie would have gotten me." And I was like... I love you.
It's moments like that that make me feel not quite so alone.
And we wonder if geekiness is infectious.
Yes. It could be.
Like, like rage, or what's the zombie infection?
Rage.
Yeah. I've got one here.
Go.
Oh, my God. I dreamt that I was LARPing with Don last night. Very strange, since I've never actually been to a LARP before, but Don and I did manage to destroy that village of gnolls.
Nice!
That was from Jonathan from Athabasca University.
Death to all gnolls, Jonathan. Yeah. I'm there with you, man.
So,
Pretty cool. Matt, hi, I'm a longtime listener. I work as a writer in an office, and what can I say? Your show helps pass the time. I also listen to a whole bunch of other shows, especially when your show takes so long between episodes. Not a day.
What? What is he talking about?
Not a dig? Really? I also work in show business as an actor, writer, director, and know how busy you can get, and you take the work when it comes your way. Anyway, SETI also has a podcast called Are We Alone? And in their March 3rd episode titled The Early Bird Gets the Wormhole... Nice title.
That's nice.
They talk extensively about flying cars and their possibility in the near future. You might want to check it out. It starts around the 35-minute mark in the episode. Just thought you'd like to know from someone you don't know, have never met, and have no clue what they like, but likes your show. Have a great day. Derek. Awesome, Derek.
Well, clearly a gentleman of taste.
I'm going to go check it out. Flying cars, man.
Brings me to a question to you guys that has asked a lot in our forums, and it's good that it's asked over and over because it changes. Do any of you three listen to other podcasts?
Yeah. Yeah, definitely.
So what podcast do you recommend?
Well, I've already, like, spouted them out. I listen to Radiolab religiously.
Mm-hmm. Radiolab is awesome,
yeah,
by the way.
I listen to This American Life. Mm-hmm. Gamer Speak, I believe it is one of them.
Okay.
I can't remember the last one. It has Nerd in the title.
Do you listen to any?
I'm a screenwriter, so I listen to Creative Screenwriting, where they basically have interviews with different screenwriters. Mm-hmm. After one of their movies come out, they talk about their career, you know.
Right. Now, these are the ones I've been listening to. It kind of changes. Sometimes I switch them to more board gamey role playing. Sometimes I don't. I listen to This Week in Tech, of course. I listen to Radio Lab, which is freaking awesome.
Yeah.
GameSpot.
Totally great.
And
GameSpot.
Yeah, 1UP.
I didn't realize that. Oh, of course they do. What am I saying? Of course they have a podcast.
1UP podcast. Problem with GameSpot is that ever since that Jeff Gershman firing, everyone keeps quitting. And so all the people on the I mean, it's like every week someone else is like saying goodbye on the podcast. I mean, there's like no one.
That's depressing.
Yeah, it's like every week someone else is gone. So it's a little bizarre. The 1UP podcast. I listen to the Dice Tower. I listen to Have Games Will Travel when that shows up once every 6 months. I, of course, used to list Dragon's Landing Inn every once in a while.
Man, you're like podcast king. Well, you're sitting there rendering for hours.
So. Well, yeah, and I drive.
My job is probably the least podcast friendly of all of ours, but I do occasionally try.
Well, I've never been able to do it actually when I was acting.
Listen. I'm going to flick you in the nose. I am going to flick you in the nose. I'm just going to flick your nose right now.
You do what?
His nose?
Yeah. Flick.
Flick, yeah.
Oh.
The lick.
Yeah. They look down on that on the set of numbers. I'm just saying, Doc.
There's an L in there. Got it.
But someone has a private trailer and a holding pen to wait their time, their hours away.
I ain't got no holding pen. I have no holding pen since I left the internet extra years ago.
All right, I got one.
Anyway,
for you.
Go on our website.
I've listened to Star Wars Action News once or twice, and I don't really dig what they cover, but I thought the two of them were cute. So the hosts were entertaining. I thought they were funny, so I listened. Dragon's Landing Inn, I like the hosts on, so I tend to listen to that every once in a while. What was the Dice Tower?
Yeah.
Dice Tower I've listened to once or twice, and I thought they were good.
Cool. But go on to our website, and you should go and find some posts or post of what you are listening to, because if there's something out there that we're missing, we would like to find it.
Okay, so this is a rather long email from Josh. He says, the following is a passage I found while looking for quotes from my favorite author, Drizzt Do'Urden. Those of you who know...
Drizzt Do'Urden? Or is it Do'Urden? I never can pronounce his name. Anyway, go ahead.
If you don't have at least enough vowels in your name for people to sound it out, I'm not going to make the effort.
Right. Chardet.
Those of you who know will say that Drizzt is not an author, but to me he is. For those of you who don't know, he's actually a character. But here's the passage. A scimitar does 1d8 damage with a 2x crit threshold. Assuming +6 damage versus fire using creatures, this would be 1d8 +6 +1 for strength.
This is total nerdic.
Let's assume max damage 25. As on crits, you only double weapon base damage times 2 strokes, and you get 50. This is significantly less hit points than a Balor demon would have, especially an ancient. No.
He says, nerdic.
He says, now...
Straight out nerdic.
When I read this, I was confused. I style myself a borderline geek and recognize that this passage was describing some role-playing scenario.
If you understand that, you are not a borderline geek. You are well and truly over the line, and you need rehab.
I might have actually understood that.
Am I the only one who understood that completely? With total ease? Yeah.
I don't know. Okay, the only thing I didn't understand is there's obviously a trait that doubled the score.
Criticals.
The critical.
No. There's something after that.
No, he was saying that 2x crit threshold.
Oh, okay. Yeah. I thought he mentioned another thing.
Aaron. Well, the other thing that you missed is you don't know the character. The character uses two weapons.
Oh, okay. Got it.
Right. This is really getting scary.
Wow.
Okay. So, now when I read this, I was confused. I style myself a borderline geek and recognize that this passage was describing some role-playing scenario. But I didn't know exactly what it was saying, and admittedly, even found it a little amusing when imagining it as a counterpoint to an argument. But then something occurred to me. What makes me or anyone else better or any better or less geeky than the person that wrote this? Take this for example. A fast WR with a 4.2 speed threshold does a lot of damage. Assuming 10 catches, 200 yards, 3 TDs versus a cover 2 defense, this would be 3x6+1. Let's assume no penalties in a rushing attack. 21 touchdowns.
Mm-hmm.
21. Touchdowns being worth 6+1 for EP.
Yeah.
Times 2 for the rushing attack, and you get 42. This is significantly more points than an opponent running zone coverage would give up.
See, the reason why, Don, you're frowning is because you don't understand this.
You don't.
So, he says, I copied the same structured paragraph from the one above and just inserted football terms instead of the role-playing ones. Doesn't that make football seem a little geeky?
Make it seem a little geeky.
It sounds like technobabble. I have no idea.
Quite similar, I would say. So why is it okay for someone to obsess and go nuts over their sport team of choice, but someone who chooses to have the same level of passion for something that is a little less socially acceptable gets looked down upon and laughed at?
Tighter clothes, more crunches.
The age-old question.
Right. All I'm trying to say is that we all have a passion for something. For a lot of people, yeah, it's their sports team. But it could also be their work. It could be the kids, cooking, creating things, art, Dungeons & Dragons, any number of things. Just because guys getting drunk at the bar to drown their sorrows because their team just lost a big game is more socially acceptable to the masses doesn't make it better than a few friends getting together with some pizza and using their imagination to create a world to step into for a while. Insert the words from your own passion into the above paragraph and see what you find. Would it seem a little geeky from the outside looking in, as with this football example? I'm thinking it probably will. And maybe you'll see you'll have a lot more in common than you thought. Oh, let's all just get along.
Yeah. I actually understood both of them. So
the guy across the street from my house, I can see him through my window here. He sometimes on Sundays mows his lawn in a baseball costume,
mm-hmm.
uniform. I guess he goes and plays.
Yeah,
but he's walking around in a baseball
uniform,
and yet,
not costume.
Oddly enough, when Aaron mows his lawn
in your
dressed
Star
as
Trek
a barbarian,
yeah. Yeah, my Star Trek costume, and I get weird looks. I just don't think it's
I will
fair.
Pay you money to do that while he's doing that.
How much?
We'll negotiate.
Okay.
I'll throw in $20. Matt
would be. Yeah, I'd totally throw in
$20. So $60 at least.
$60 bucks.
It'd be even.
I'll think about it.
It would be even better if it was one of those lawn tractors. It actually had a front dish on it.
Engage.
My friends and I used to play this game where we would try and bet people to do outrageous things and slowly work the money up and see how low, like try not to get quite up there and see if they would take it.
There's a television show on Spike coming out that is just that, which is how little money they will spend to get people to do some gross stuff. And it's amazing what people will do for a dollar.
Yeah,
that's there you bulk. Go.
Yeah,
because let's keep moving. Don, get it.
Hey, geeks. My name is Glenn, and I'm a mild geek from Texas.
Okay.
Do they have anything mild in Texas? I thought that was like the spicy, robust
state. True. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. My geeky vices are Star Trek and Wars, Battlestar Galactica, and comic books. While I love the podcast, I have to say I'm a little uncomfortable with the term geeklings. I can't explain it. It just bugs me. Anyway, I've just finished listening to season 3 recap of Battlestar Galactica, and I wanted to stand up for Don. I'm 38 years old and have never heard the song All Along the Watchtower. Hang in there, Don. You're not alone. Thank you, Glenn.
So, Don.
There was postings on the forum. There were emails of all the people who did not ever hear that song or of that song. I am not alone.
Geeks.
Mwaha.
Mwaha. Geeklings.
Mwaha.
Is that Ethan? Is that who it was?
Glenn.
Glenn. Glenn.
You know, so
you are
they should
a geekling.
Make, they should
a
make geekling. Shows that are just for you people who've never seen something. That's
yeah, it's
great.
Called Babylon 5.
They do. It's called every television show.
It's called
for
Babylon
everybody.
For everybody?
If you've already seen the show, why would you watch it again?
No, I'm just saying, like you know, they'll put in all these things that nobody... I mean, we'll just start reusing content because, you know, some percent of the audience hasn't heard of this before.
Okay, yeah. This is getting way too That's complex. The song choice for every show ever.
All Peter. Right, move on. What's the next?
All right. Hi, Geek Gurus. My name is Misa. Really?
That how they set this person has to explain their name every yeah. time they introduce them.
And wait, here's the rest of the parenthetical.
It's like a Jar Jar Binks. Yeah.
And yes, much like Jar Jar Binks would pronounce it. And I am a geekette living
Misa?
In... And we know Jar Jar, and maybe I'm going to have to bring him on the show.
Yeah, get him on here to have
get him on.
He's not later. Allowed to do the voice, though.
True. Well, he can say he's doing something else. Anyway, she's a geekette living in Finland, and I just wanted to write in and express my support and gratitude for the show. I heard about your podcast on a Joss Whedon board a few days ago, and he was on your 88th episode, and I enjoyed it tremendously. The natural things, besides subscribing, of course, was to start going through the rest of the archives, and I must say I am enjoying them also immensely. I never used to think of myself as a geek. I mean, there was only the Buffy Angel Firefly thing, and the Star Wars thing, and the Star Trek, and Quantum Leap, and the general sci-fi. Oh, right, fine! But you have convinced me, and I have come to embrace my geekness. I am also contemplating making use of my son's various game consoles in the evenings to better acquaint myself with the video gaming world. Keep up the good work, guys, and I hope to hear lots more of you in the future. Misa. P.S. I know you only just had Joss Whedon on, but is there any chance of you doing a Buffy episode sometime soon, or maybe a general vampire one? P.P.S. Just now I went to find your email address on the contacts page, and lo and behold, there are your pictures. Oh my god, you're all so cute!
Aww.
Thank you. We appreciate being called
Thank
cute.
You, Misa.
Oh, and we just lost a listener.
Aaron, a hell in a handbasket.
Oh, I kid so because nice. I love Misa. Oh. I kid because I love Misa.
Don's been wanting to do a vampire episode forever. And
I thought we did do a vampire episode. We did vampire movies.
Vampire That's movie we episode.
We haven't done a Buffy. So we've been asked to do Buffy. We need to get some Buffy.
Well, if I remember right, I'm the only one here who's seen all episodes.
Well, no, we need to get some.
You've seen them?
I've seen all.
Okay.
We need to get. We can get Lisa. For God's sake, she worked on it.
Yeah. She edited the musical episode.
I mean,
so.
We need to get a Buffy team. Maybe Joss will come back. He enjoyed doing the show.
Maybe
so.
Joss can get us somebody else on the show. Maybe Joss could get us, not Sarah Michelle
Just
Gellar.
Just pimp
but,
him out.
You know,
yeah,
or,
man.
Or, you know.
Lisa could find somebody.
Another big writer or something.
Yeah.
Someone that has a lot of knowledge and can.
I will work on
I will
work
be his personal valet for a day if he can get us Allison Hannigan. I'm just saying.
Who's that?
Willow. Willow.
Oh, she's doing CBS shows.
Yeah, I've got
that
one.
Doesn't lessen my love for her.
All right.
So I've got one from.
CBS.
So I've got one from Will, from the forums.
Will, I think, has been in every mailbag.
Is this our Will?
This is our Will?
Yes, okay. Our Will.
He says, Brian...
Hold on, open up the window and let him know we're doing one of his...
Yes, exactly. He's been
Chaos!
He says, Brian and Munich and I have been working on our own podcast for a few months, and we're ready to release some content. We have been massive promoters of Geeks On for years, almost 4 years now, and we were wondering if we could get a shout-out on the next show. Shout-out! Woo! All right. So their show is called SecureImmaturity.com, and they've got a couple of episodes. They've got Brian. They've got Smarty Librarian. We'll be in a couple of them. So, I mean, you know, these are some of –
And some of those people did the – they have kind of a like a Geeks On addendum show that was pretty good. Like, they would talk about things that we...
All of these people are just sparkling personalities on our forum that are just so... Like, their posts are always such joys to read.
Yeah, there's another shout-out also that we're supposed to do to realmofgaming.com, because they're cool as well, and they put a link up to us on their site.
Huh. Well, Smarty is constantly giving us like more information about things like, oh, you got this wrong and fixing it. Yeah. So she is
our Bollywood expert.
Well, she's one. I mean,
yeah, she is.
I always look forward to getting emails from her because I always
love
learn something.
Love Story 2050. Man, that was some video.
Woo. What's that?
Did you see that? She
no.
sent this link to Love Story 2050, a new Bollywood.
I didn't get that.
It's sci-fi Bollywood.
Oh, I have that. I haven't had the chance to get it yet.
It's cuckoo crazy. And the woman is ridiculously hot.
She's like, redunculous.
Redunculous.
But Smarty always like get, you know, takes whatever we've done in our in our podcast to the next level. She's always like, well, you missed this and this and this. And it's always like, oh, wow, that's so cool. So,
but everyone.
And she looks good in the Geeks on T-shirt.
Everyone on
Heck yeah.
But everyone in that podcast is just so much fun to listen to. Give it a shot.
All right, this one's for Aaron.
Okay, you guys are going to kill me for this one.
Okay.
This email is for Aaron. Aaron, just wondering what you thought of the final cut of Blade Runner. Interesting, there's a small dialogue change in the scene where Roy Beatty confronts Tyrell. Not sure if it's the Han shoots first situation. However, instead of saying, I want more life, fucker, he now says, I want more life, father. I always liked the original line. It showed that Roy Beatty was angry at Tyrell. The new line seems to wimp out the scene. Okay. To all you people out there who, this is going to probably destroy my geek cred, but I have not seen the final cut yet.
Ah!
And here's the reason why.
You have the poster on the damn wall.
No, here's the reason why.
Okay.
I received, it's sitting right over here in standard definition.
Uh-huh.
And
oh, okay.
I want for Christmas.
Mm-hmm.
And I got it as a gift, and I need to return it to get the, because I wanted the high def version. Yeah. Well, this was during the
high def
DVD debacle. I have a high def DVD player, but decided that I wanted to keep this great version for a long period of time. So I'm going to get it on Blu-ray, and I only want to see it in high definition. And so I'm waiting to get my Blu-ray player.
So you're being a geek snob.
So
you're not actually. No. Purist.
So when I get my Blu-ray player, the first thing I'm watching is Blade Runner in high definition. So.
You know, I don't like to let any opportunity to mock Aaron slip by, but I have to completely agree with you on this one.
Does that mean you're actually getting a PS3?
I'm going to buy a PS3 here soon.
Ooh. Well, like, then you can play the video
even,
game.
Even some of my dumbass movies, like I love Legend, right? I would want to see Legend on the big glorious. You know,
another Ridley Scott movie. We'll have a Ridley Scott high definition Blu-ray marathon.
Just not the director's cut.
So yes, so I have not formed an opinion about that version of the cut because I do not want to see it in standard definition.
Okay,
does that get some of my nerd credit back?
Yes. We all definitely from just understanding that one sentence already made our geek card.
By the way, if anybody wants to buy my HD, standard def,
we should all
version.
Sign
and we'll
it
all
and
sign
have
it.
A competition at the end of the year.
I actually do have an episode. I do have the DVD.
Who wants a signature of it?
Of Species 3 that Matt has signed.
No.
That we will one day be giving out as a prize.
No.
Species 3 starring Ooh. Matt.
Matt, can Matt
we
will
put,
sign
like,
it.
Blood splat, like, put your blood splatters on it. And it could be like the death scene of like. That'd be awesome.
Oh, God.
Now with real blood.
Now with blood splatter.
Real Matt blood all over it. Mm. All right, what's the next one?
Hey, wouldn't be the first tentacle you've taken to your head for your career.
Whoa.
Oh. Wait.
What?
There's another one of those weird... Okay, this is weird. We've had, this is the third weird audio...
I thought I heard... Something.
Yeah, it's like someone's talking.
Sounds tinny.
Yeah, it's like someone's talking. That is crazy.
Mm-hmm. It's really weird.
Cuckoo for Cocoa Puffs. Okay.
I mean, I wonder if anybody, if the listeners can hear that or if it's just us.
Yeah.
I think you're messing with our head here.
That's not me.
I think you're doing it.
You don't hear it?
I'll check it out. Well, we'll check it. We'll check it out
on the edit.
All right.
Okay. All right. Well, after our Gary Gygax tribute episode where we talked about Dungeons and Dragons. Nick from Kalamazoo wrote us. He said...
Really? That's my wife's hometown.
I did not know that. He said, 4th edition was previewed this year at DDXP, Dungeons and Dragons Experience, in Alexandria, Virginia.
Okay.
There were 2 modules that were previewed, some new mechanics of the game, 6 pre-generated characters, blah, 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 blah. He said the combat system is pretty good. There are options even at the first level. The wizard doesn't cast his 3 spells and do nothing in combat. He has at will powers. He has at will powers. He has at will powers. That's okay. It. Magic missile. Switch now has an attack roll and certain per encounter spells. There is also a powerful daily power. It's pretty balanced. People have more hit points and spells and such and do more damage. No more times 3 critical hits. You roll a 20, you do a max damage. No rolling to confirm.
Hmm. Interesting.
So,
I will pick it up to check it out.
Yeah.
Of course you will. Excellent. Hey guys, first and foremost, love the show. I've been there since your first episode. I have thought on a geek topic I don't hear much about. I'm a big fan of the edutainment shows, typically littering the Discovery Network, such as Mythbusters, Modern Marvels, or pretty much anything on the Science Channel.
Mm-hmm.
Is there any chance you could cover your take on some of these shows? They seem to be the last remaining brain food on television. Regards, Wayne. Absolutely. I am actually trying to get either Jamie or anybody from Mythbusters to show up.
I should probably watch more of those.
Mythbusters is fantastic.
I love Mythbusters.
I mean, I like them when I see them. I just don't have them on my TV.
Adam and Jamie are fantastic. The three,
The schmoes.
Yeah.
I mean, the two lead guys are fantastic and smart.
Well, they're so competent.
Much. Yeah. They're competent.
But they're all competent. Everybody.
Well, yeah, they're all competent, but the three schmoes always mess something up.
Right.
So I love that.
The show would be about maybe some of the myths that they busted.
Maybe. Like, I mean, what I would say is...
We'd have to talk about the show in general. Yeah.
Yeah. Because, I mean, they've also brought this new show on called Smash Lab, which mm-hmm. is obviously a complete copy, and I hate that show. Hmm. I'd love to get Grant Imahara on the show. Maybe I can...
Yeah. But it's... As far as the educational content in television, yeah, it does seem to have gone away. Like, Learning Channel, Discovery Channel, that's pretty much the opposite.
I watch... There's all these new channels, science channels that...
Yeah, but they're always pushed to the side, and they rarely get mainstream. Them. You know, Mythbusters is the closest thing we've got to a mainstream educational show.
Yeah. I love Mythbusters. I watch National Geographic
as
well.
There's all sorts of awesome educational shows out now, way more than there's ever been, ever.
But Mythbusters does a really good job of making it fun.
Well, no, I'm not saying it's not a bad show. Well, I'm just going to counter that.
I'm going to counter that by saying there's more of every single type of show than there's ever been in every time before. You know, there are networks dedicated to it. Like, I love History Channel, but, History Channel is like my freaking go-to channel for whenever I want something.
Wait, isn't that part of the history thing that you're talking about? Biography Channel, History Channel, Science Channel, Discovery Channel, Learning Channel. All right.
I mean, they're there, but I don't think they're really the major splash that everyone thinks they could be. Let's see. From Jordan. Good evening, my geeky brethren. I am a simple 16-year-old geek, dungeon master, MMO junkie, fantasy writer. You know the essentials. I was just listening to your most recent podcast where you're talking about role-playing games, D&D in particular. You have no idea how helpful this was to me. You see, I just recently started DMing for my small group of geeky underlings. I would use different things that my dad would always use when he would DM for me back before the dark times, before the Empire. But I never thought of bringing different elements that I learned in acting class to my D&D adventures. Mm-hmm. Thank you all for your brilliant ideas on how to be a better DM. If you have any other tips, perhaps on how to make a freaking epic campaign, email me. Live long and prosper, my geek brothers. Jordan.
Thank you.
I want to do a lot more shows on role-playing and even specific things, like plot ideas for, jungle adventures or space adventures. I mean, I think these would all be fun.
Jordan, I would recommend reading... There's a book that's basically based on how to create an epic adventure that everyone here is familiar with, which is 1001 Arabian Nights. The basic premise is... A woman whose life depends on telling stories that the audience never wants to hear end. And so you have to apply that basic principle to your role-playing game. So never have less than two storylines is my advice.
Right.
Because as long as one story is unresolved, as long as people are interested in that story, they want to hear how that one will resolve.
Mm-hmm.
So as they're trying to get to the ending of that one, Start your next.
I heard recently someone interviewed a developer for, it may have been Grand Theft Auto, but for open world video games.
Mm-hmm.
And they said, what's the key to open world video games is, well, you want to keep motivation going and you have all these missions, but you never want anyone to end the mission and not ever feel like there's something else to do. So right before any task is resolved, you want to make sure that you introduce some other motivation, storyline, or whatever it is, so that when mm-hmm. there's never a moment that you feel like I'm complete and satisfied.
Right.
There always has to be at least the seed started of another adventure before the current one ends.
I also found a really cool book at the Errol's Gaming Hobby here in Los Angeles. It is a book that is out of print, but it was really fascinating. It's by Ralph Telsorian Games. They made Cyberpunk. It's called Listen Up, You Primitive Screwheads. And it's basically a game master's guide, but rather than being a game master's guide that basically deals with the details and the crunchiness of the game, which is what a lot of them do, this one is all about storytelling and all about how to be a better game master.
That sounds great.
So if you find that book, it's really great, and it's all actually, specifically because it's cyberpunk, it's all about creating mood over creating scenarios, so which is really, really neat.
Another way to approach this is think about two things. Think about some of the best books you've ever read, and also think about some of the best games you've ever played. Okay.
Or movies you've seen.
So, for example, when I say think about books, most books that are some of my favorite books, they start off with a character when they're a kid. And you meet this character, and the things that they're dealing with are so small and so intimate. Like, oftentimes it's just about surviving on the streets. And it takes a long time. You know, you get to watch them grow up. They develop their skills. Yeah, and their world slowly changes and evolves until they grow up into this epic campaign. So basically what I'm talking about is a sense of scope. At first, you start with a very small sense of scope, and your story may be so intimate that it's just about a guy trying to survive in a small little section of a town and the problems that are happening in the small section of town. By the time it's over, it's about this world traversing crusade. So
Lord of the Rings is like the ultimate version where you literally have the Shire, which is the most quaint thing you could possibly... I mean, he goes out of his way to tell you how how quaint and cute this thing is, so that at the end, that's so far away and it's so grand with giant armies with thousands and tens of thousands of people. It just seems like a million miles away, and you've done that journey with the character, so it feels like a, quote, epic story.
Yeah.
And then the second thing is that if you think about, like, for example, we were talking about some of Rockstar's things, Grand Theft Auto, Bully. So oftentimes, they basically break their story into five chapters. And each chapter is an evolution of the overall story. Hmm. Within those five chapters, after they figured out what the sort of macro or overarching story is.
Yeah, macro is good.
Then they also go and they try and find little micro stories that go on inside each chapter that are more self-included. Mm-hmm. So if you basically figure out what your big story is, and then you take the little tiny chunks of it and break them up and then find stories that are independent that weave into that big story, that's a way to do it. Have a sense of where you want to go first.
Funky. Mm-hmm.
All right, excellent. We should find the last couple of...
Find the last few. All right, so, hey guys and gals, I found your content link from a link over at BoardGamePodcast.com. For starters, I want to say I enjoy your witty banter.
Thanks.
Appreciate the arguments.
Thanks.
The only advice about that I would give is to check the taking it personal, but honesty is nice to hear in folks who care so much about something that they're willing to argue about it. Hey, something that rarely occurs here in Japan. They wanted to respond to the fact that we had talked about the Japanese and Japanese gaming and stuff.
Oh,
like
yeah.
That. Firstly, Japanese generally do not play American games. They are perceived as too violent, and additionally, the core concepts of North American games tend to be about Flash saving the universe. Japanese are trained from very young ages to groupthink. They're taught in the learn the concept and repeat in a memorized fashion. This modus operandi is very effective in things such as math and engineering, but almost useless for creative thinking. This methodology translated rather well to anime, which I find to be rather unsurprising. I can go into further detail if you like, but you have to ask, otherwise your eyes might glaze over. Of the over 100 kids of high school and younger ages I know, exactly zero have a Microsoft game box. All have PS2, with many having the new handheld DS and other having received the Wii this past Christmas. Do Japanese buy Japanese products? Hell yeah, they do. The reasons for this are by no means simple, but suffice to say they are, in general, not risk-taking type personalities. If the Sony or Nintendo breaks, they call the service center and it's fixed or replaced. The country is based on the typical Asian tiger economic principle. I think that's more of what it is, of basing the economy on exports. Thus, imported goods are somewhat rare and always expensive. Japanese otaku are everywhere, and almost everyone has this tendency. They work hard, they don't have excessive amounts of free time, so they tend to spend money on niche products. These products, or rather the demands for these products, spawn neighborhoods where such things can be purchased. Remember, they groupthink everything, and it's far easier to go with the flow and put your new retail otaku space in the neighborhood where other like-minded geeks congregate. Japanese consumers burn off stress through these activities. I know teenage boys who save allowance money for months to afford a day trip to Tokyo to geek shop. Akihabara, or Electric Town in Tokyo, is the classic example of this behavior, but Osaka has Namba, and Nagoya has Osu. They all serve the electronic geek nerds. As a whole, this country does indeed follow the trends of America. I found it helpful to think of it kind of like a poor copy machine. America makes the original, where it's copied again and again and again. The original idea is still pretty much intact, but it has been copied so many times, sometimes the detail is lost. On the surface, it looks fine, but when examined in detail, you find substantial bits either pasted on or overlooked entirely. If you have questions, please ask. Most Americans are pretty uninformed about foreign countries, so I find it refreshing to hear you talk about it from a fan in Japan, Paul.
Nice.
Yeah. Following up on that same concept, let's see. This is from Jean-François. With the company I work for, I had a chance to go to work in other countries for quite long time periods. I lived in China for some time, and there was a weird trend that I remarked upon. Chinese geeks, well, my workmates, all had what they called American names, just normal English names that they gave themselves.
True.
A guy named Dong, his American name was Bill. Then I went to work in Bucharest, and the guys there also took English names. Jean Nature was Johnny. Then I thought about it and realized that I also did the same thing. I'm often called Jeff. This is probably not a geek-only thing, but it's something I found very interesting.
I wonder if it's sort of a lingua franca or lingua americana kind of thing.
Possibly.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't really know any American people who take on, like, Asian names.
Mm-hmm. Well, I go with that. Yeah. That'll change in 20 years. You know, I mean, my grandmother took an American name. My mom, however, has an Indian name, so it's...
But I also wonder if it's partially because, you know, like, Americans are where the money is, for mm-hmm. partially, so the work tends to involve America at some point. And we're so incredibly bad at pronouncing other cultural
Maybe
names.
Maybe that's it. Just don't want...
They just get sick of us slaughtering their names.
I wonder if now that we're a little less where the money is...
yeah.
It may shift over the next dollar, couple years.
I wonder if everyone's going to be, like, taking... Chinese name or something.
Should be good. Everybody's going to be Golden Tiger.
I am Zhao.
All right. Should this be our last one?
Sure. Right. Why not?
Let me do one more, too. After.
Okay. Cool.
Okay. Hi, guys. Greetings from D.C. Was listening to an older episode Friday afternoon at work, counting down the minutes till I could hit the road. And when I finally pulled myself away from the great chat about vampire movies, left the offices and hopped onto the metro. And who should I see but four gentlemen who look eerily similar to you guys? I mean, dead ringers, down to the clothes in your photos. There was the oatmeal-colored sweater on the Aaron doppelganger, and Don's facsimile was wearing the Hawaiian print. I had to stop myself from walking up to him and say, cheerfully screaming, hello, my geeklings! They hopped on a train in the opposite direction a few seconds later, and it's good things I was close to peppering him with questions far geekier than the subway system could have withstood. Thought you guys would get a kick out of your East Coast twins. Mary.
Random.
I used to live in D.C., so that would have been weird.
Did you lay genetic material down
maybe.
At some point?
I visited Washington, D.C.
I lived there for 2 months.
Thank you, Mary.
Peter, have you ever been to Washington? Okay.
Chain is
genetic
broken.
Material in a radioactive vat theory.
Wait. Actually, I think I was there when I was a kid once. Briefly.
Maybe genetic material in a radioactive vat. Perhaps could have worked.
Come back in time.
All right, so this one is actually from a guy whose first and middle name are actually Benjamin Franklin. That's his first and middle name.
Nice.
He says, hey, geeks, I just listened to your education episode, and I wanted to respond to some of your comments. I'm a first-year Spanish teacher in a Delaware high school. I'm 22, and much of the stuff that was said was absolutely right. One of the biggest problems that I see in my class every day is that I effectively have no real punishment of the students. Many of the students don't mm-hmm. care about any of the punishments that can be given, and it is even illegal to punish students academically for their behavior.
What?
This means that I cannot fail a student for a test just because they skipped that class. College professors wouldn't have thought twice of
Wait, for skipping the class?
Skipping.
That's not a behavior. That's fucking not showing up and not doing the work.
They shouldn't. Oh, that's annoying.
I have students get in my face because they know that there is virtually nothing that I can do to stop them from continuing their atrocious behavior. It was mentioned during the show that teachers used to be the parents during the day. For some students, though, this doesn't just last for the school day. I have a lot of students for whom I am the only source of attention and caring. Just a few more notes, I promise. One of the students mentioned that the students are not very knowledgeable about technology. Again, right on. While they are more knowledgeable about computers than many of my colleagues, they know very little about computers. It's just like he said, they can go to MySpace and that's about it. The generation gap is much smaller than the media lets on. Last thing. You guys mentioned that schools should be teaching critical thinking and analysis instead of rote memorization. I completely agree with this, but schools can't do this while the states tell the schools what they must teach.
Yeah.
My colleagues in the core
Obama.
Subjects...
My
colleagues, we have no political views on this.
No, never.
Geeks On, now with 50% less political content.
Yes.
We've been better.
Yeah.
We're making an effort, people.
We're making an effort. My colleagues in the core subjects are hamstrung because they in what they can teach, or else the students will fail the state test. And my school in particular is already in trouble for poor state test scores.
Jesus.
As a result, the kids are not taught critical teaching. Or thinking. Critical thinking, but rather a form of memorization that resembles analysis. Well, that's interesting. I push critical thinking and analysis. That's an interesting sentence. As a result, the kids are not taught critical thinking, but rather a form of memorization that resembles, I guess, resembles analysis, not actually analysis. You're going to have to fix this, Dave.
My fault now.
I push critical thinking analysis to my freshmen and sophomores, but they don't get it, and it's incredibly difficult to teach these kids this skill at their age. That being said, I love my job. Most teachers love their job. There's nothing more enjoyable to me than helping a high school kid understand something for the first time or let that same kid know that someone is looking out for them. Sorry about the long message, but I wanted to share a young teacher's experience with you. I love this show, even though I don't always agree with you.
What?
Thanks for reading this. Adios, Ben.
Yeah. Oh, it's a good one.
Yeah, our education episode has spawned more commentary on the boards than just about anything.
I think it hits home.
Yeah.
I think it hits home big time.
It's something that I think everyone has an opinion on.
Yeah, true.
It's a common experience we've all had.
True dat.
Okay, so that's the end of the mailbag.
Yeah.
But we do want to go out with a little bit that we came up with. We want to do some. We came up with some time travel jokes.
Yes.
But we've invented this machine here.
Mm-hmm.
Here, let me turn it on and get it warmed up.
Cool.
What we're going to do is we're going to send the punchlines into the past.
Karen?
Yeah.
Should it be sparking like that?
Yeah. Yeah, that's part of it.
That's fine.
Yeah, that's fine.
It smells like ozone.
So we're going to
standing on end. Mine's kind of like prickly, tingly. You know?
Yeah,
that's a lot of hair.
I'm the furthest away, so yeah.
You look like a Furby.
All right. So the idea is we're gonna start out the joke, and then we're gonna put the punchline into the time machine and send it back in time.
Okay.
So do you want me to start?
Yeah,
I'll start. Mine's not great, so this is probably better.
No
than
disclaimers.
We always put it in. Yeah,
because
mine are always terrible. Okay. So the Time Lord saunters up to the DeLorean with authority. All right, Doc. Do you know why I'm going to give you a ticket? Great Scott! I have no idea. Okay. Now the punchline is coming up, but let me put it in the machine here.
Okay. Talking to that weird funnel thing. What did you do?
Did you use your wife's face steamer?
Okay, here it goes. I'm going to send it. All right, so I sent off the punchline. So in order for you to hear it, you actually have to...
How are we going to hear the punchlines?
Well, but you can... I remember the punchline from earlier because we already sent it.
So is it funny or is... you've already heard it.
I've heard it before,
I've heard that joke somewhere. Yeah. I must have heard it from you.
Yeah.
I already knew the punchline, so it was kind of,
Yeah.
Yeah, I guess.
Let's move on.
All right, well, let's try Matt.
Okay. Mine's a longer one. The following is a conversation heard between Bill Gates moving into his new house. There are a few issues we need to discuss, Bill. The contractor, you have a basic support option. Calls are free for the first 90 days and $75 a call thereafter, okay? Bill, the first issue is the living room. We think it's a little smaller than we anticipated. The contractor, some compromises had to be made to get it out by the release date. Bill, but we won't be able to fit all our furniture in there. Contractor, well, you have two options. You can purchase a new, larger living room, or you can use a stacker. Bill, stacker? Yeah, it allows you to fit twice as much furniture into the room by stacking it. Of course, you put the entertainment center on the couch, the chairs on the table, you leave an empty spot. So when you want to use some of the furniture, you can unstack what you need. Oh, no, I don't know. Issue two, the second issue is the light fixtures. The bulbs we bought with us from our old home won't fit. The threads run the wrong way. Oh, that's easy. Those bulbs aren't plug and play. You have to upgrade to new bulbs. And the electrical outfits? The holes are round. They're not rectangular. How do I fix that? Just uninstall and reinstall the electrical system. You're kidding. No. It's the only way. Well, I have one last problem. Sometimes when I have guests over, someone will flush the toilet and it won't stop. The water pressure drops so low that the showers don't work. That's a resource leakage problem. One fixture is failing to terminate and is hogging the resources, preventing access from the other fixtures. And how do I fix that? Well, after each flush, all you need to do is you all need to exit the house, turn off the water at the street, turn it back on, re-enter the house, and then you get back to work. That's the last straw. What kind of product are you selling me?
All right, now put the... put the punchline into the machine.
All right.
Okay, yeah. So it's off. It's going. All right.
I think I've heard it before.
I'm sort of having deja vu over this.
I've heard that. It's just not funny if you've heard the joke before.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah.
Well, all right, Don.
Okay, last one. Let's see. What do you get when Donald and Daisy Duck, hoping to remove Mickey Mouse from the equation and take over Disney World for themselves, go back in time and kill Walt Disney, not realizing they'd also be destroying the man who invented them?
What?
Okay, put it in the machine here.
A pair of ducks.
No, wait, Don, you have to put it back in the machine.
It's not working.
Don, you have to put it in the machine.
No, screw that.
Don, we sent it back. We heard it already. You have to put it in the machine, otherwise...
Oh, freaking Star Trek logic. Come on.
Don, we've heard the joke. Yes. If you don't put the thing in the machine, then you cause a time loop, and the whole universe is going to collapse.
No, I don't believe that.
Okay, every time... Oh, my God. Don, put it.